You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Derek Osborne. So, Derek, it's good to have you here this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for the invite.
And this is part of my interviewing all three candidates for Tompkins County Sheriff. And we're going to do the regular show, most of the regular show, but with a question that's oriented towards candidates, thrown in kind of half the way through or three quarters of the way through. So who are you? What do we need to know about the qualities you aspire to live by, what you've, the labels you wear, the things you've done to start this conversation?
Okay. Well, thank you.
It's a big one.
Yeah, that's a big question.
But it's one that you can just kind of, we need a sketch. And I'm assuming that, you know, the people who are politically active already know the answers to those questions, but those who aren't don't. And so, and my show is to kind of present a picture of a person as balanced and as complete as we can in a way that's personal, but doesn't get private, but it gets a personal picture.
Sure. Well, some of my background is, you know, quite simply, I've been in public safety almost my entire adult life. I worked for the sheriff's office, retired there 4 years ago as undersheriff. But before that, I started in the city of Cortland as a patrol officer where I was born and raised. Still have roots there, obviously. Transferred to Tompkins County back in 2001 as a deputy sheriff. Moved up through the ranks as investigator, senior investigator, captain, and then undersheriff before I retired. So, you know, public safety is something that's always kind of been in my blood, something I've always been interested in since I was a young child. And I've pursued that almost my entire life. And I'm proud of my career, and I'm looking forward to getting back in the game and serving Tompkins County as the next sheriff.
So, What are some of the, that's one piece of your life.
Sure.
But I'm sure what are some of the other labels that you've worn and some of the other things that, about your life, the qualities or the values you've tried to live by?
Well, my values are quite simple, as a lot of people can probably, attest to and have similar experiences. I'm a father of three daughters, which has dictated a lot of my life, and has changed me immensely as a person.
If you choose to take the challenge, it will.
Yeah, exactly. And I never saw myself, first of all, as having three children in my life, let alone all girls. Right. But I guess that was what was in the cards for me. You know, and then looking back and reflecting on that, you know, I think it was... has been a blessing to me. It's really mellowed me out as a person. I have three girls that are had me wrapped right around their fingers. And I think back, you know, geez, I always wish, you know, maybe if I had a boy, that would have been nice too. But I think it was nice having three girls. And perhaps I would have been too hard on a boy anyways. So,
and what did you mean by they mellowed you out?
Well... You know, I being in law enforcement for so many years, I mean, you kind of become kind of hard in your heart. It's a very tough job. You see a lot of bad things, and it can make you hard as a person if you're not careful.
You can either be strong and flexible, or you can become hard. And
right.
That balance is tough.
Yeah, and when you're a male and you're in that type of field. You kind of tend to be that strong person all the time. And, you know, with three girls in your life, you have to learn to let your guard down. And that helped me a lot for sure.
And you said you grew up in Cortland.
I did. Yes.
How has moving from working in Cortland to working in Tompkins County been?
It was really different. In Cortland, it was an extremely busy police department. I believe it probably still is. There was a lot of things to deal with. In working in the Ithaca area, it was quite different. Just the cultural differences and the people you're serving and things like that. It's a completely different ball game. I learned a lot about law enforcement in Cortland because just of the nature of the job and how busy it was all the time.
So it's lots of nuts and bolts.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You learn the ins and outs of everything and how to handle any type of case quickly and efficiently. And it was a nice change coming to Tompkins County. That's for sure.
Okay. okay, well, you just use the word in that you're going to have in your first song. A change is going to come. and this is Greta Van Fleet. This is heavy metal.
It's hard rock. People would be surprised. I you know, as a sheriff candidate, I really enjoy hard rock music, heavy metal music. Right. Maybe that people think that's a little different, but
also, I mean, it's you're the father of three daughters that you feel close to, and that's and those are all things that we draw out in the show, and, sure. and it's just part of who you are uniquely. So we're going to play an artist that I haven't heard before, and this is Greta Van Fleet. A Change Is Going to Come. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Derek Osborne. So, Derek, the question that I ask at this point in the show is usually, what life experiences did you have to have in order to know what you value, to live the life that you value now?
Sure.
And what did you have to go through?
Well, you know, I often tell people growing up, I was always interested in public safety, and you know, I grew up watching all the great shows, Chips, Adam 12,
a child of all the, that of the late 70s and 80s.
Yeah, so I knew exactly. So I knew early going on what I was interested in doing, and I think it was my childhood in general that kind of led me in the direction where I ended up. And I can say, you know, my childhood, like a lot of people, was very volatile. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in a split home. I actually had, you know, four different stepfathers growing up, witnessed a lot of domestic violence, abuse, mm-hmm. things of that nature. And I think that had a profound impact on me. It's not so much, you know, like it's a sad story, but it's what really molded me and drove me in the direction I think I ended up in. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, basically, you know, the negativity that surrounded me at that age, instilled in me a sense of wanting to have some level of peace and provide that for other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's what made me successful in that field.
And it's one of those funny things that can go either way. People who have been exposed to it can become committed to changing it, but also then discover that they don't know how to do anything but repeat it. On some
yeah,
level.
Yeah, exactly.
Very, and so how did you but before we go down that path, what I wanted to do is as a child, your reaction to injustice is to want to fix it, but you're
exactly.
relatively powerless around the giants around you
right.
to actually have any impact on it. And how did you deal with that sense of powerlessness as well as that desire? You know, how did that play? How did your coming to terms with that awkwardness?
Well, I mean, as a child, you really don't have really any real recourse to.
Some children disappear. They go off and hang out by themselves, or they go out and live outside the home, or
sure,
or they find. But they, you know, I was just wondering how you did you get into sports? What?
No, I didn't get into sports. Yeah. And maybe that led to, you know, the way I was in my younger years and even my teen years. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
Believe it or not, I was painfully shy. Uh-huh, you know, all uh-huh. through high school. You know, and that's not something that I. Turned around until much later in life,
right.
You know, after high school, you know, I went to boot camp, you know, and then, uh-huh. you know, if that doesn't cure you of shyness, nothing will, I say.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. you have to be fully present and accounted for. And
yeah,
if you're shy
exactly.
and withdrawn,
yeah.
That...
And you definitely find your voice. And, right. you know, as time went on, I got better and better. And then, you know, of course I went to the police academy and got involved in public safety and things like that. And, you know, there's definitely things you can turn around and change in your life. And mm-hmm. and what you mentioned about when bad things happen to you, you can go one direction or the other. That's true.
And sometimes both at the same time.
Exactly. You know, and working with people who commit crimes and things like that, you know, you do look at them. And a lot of times you find people want to use the bad things that happen in their life as maybe as an excuse, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, to live the life they're doing. But, you know, I believe everybody, you know, can make a decision on what direction they want their life to go. I mean, our life isn't based, and it doesn't necessarily go in the direction based on our experiences, but what we choose to do with it. And I strongly feel that way.
Right. I mean, what you're describing is a little bit between a person who needs to kind of is stuck in repeating the past versus
sure.
a person who uses the energy from the past to compel one into a different future.
Right.
And that's a transition that's, you know, getting off of repeat and onto the next chapter mm-hmm. is often.
Yeah. And it's tough.
Transition.
It's human nature.
Yeah.
I mean, we tend to repeat things for sure.
Right. Right. And, so what about your character, or what about the way you approach people and your life came out of that? How does your experience of an unstable upbringing, and it may not have been, but you described it in the rough contours. How does that shape the way you approach people now?
Well, you have to be careful when you're dealing with people. I mean, especially in public safety. I mean, your job is to hold people accountable. There's no mm-hmm. way around mm-hmm. that. People do bad things at times, and they have to be held accountable. And being in public safety, you have to uphold the law. But you also have to be careful when you approach people, because you don't know where they're coming from. And it's important to keep that in mind. You don't know what their background is necessarily. What is going on in their life, and it's okay to keep that mm-hmm. in mind as well. And I think you just have to be careful with that. You have to ride that fine line, so to speak, with wanting to hold somebody accountable, but at the same time, understanding what is going on in their life as well.
Well, and the two are not exclusive.
Sure.
It's a both and. How did your experience of growing up affect the way in which you raised your own three daughters?
Well, you talk about repeating behaviors. You have to be very careful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm proud to say, you know, there was no domestic violence in my households or anything mm-hmm. like that. But you have to, and it's almost hard to explain. My goal has always been, you know, obviously I don't want my children to grow up the way I did. And
right.
that's always in the back of your mind.
Right.
You know, you
right.
want to provide them positive experiences and, not have to deal with any of the stuff I did. And I think all parents feel that way. You know, right. Parents always want better for their children. Yeah, absolutely. So if anything, that's always been in the back of my mind that, you know, I want my children to, you know, have something better than I did. And that's always been my goal. Mm-hmm.
So how did that play out in terms of your making choices about, you know, when kids, they're, you know, they're kids that are, you know, when your kids grow up, they have to take some risks and you have to let them do it. And how did that play out? And with their mother and their mothers and right. How did that play out?
Well, it's interesting you say that because it's very easy to fall in the trap being a father of young girls, mm-hmm. also being in public safety and law enforcement,
right.
that you can be almost over the top protectionist, you know,
right.
You see what's going on bad in the world day to day, and you translate that into, I have to make sure nothing bad ever happens to my child. And everybody feels that, I know, but I think when you're in law enforcement, maybe you can tend to take that to the next level, and you have to be careful with that.
And you have to be careful with that with citizens too.
Sure.
When my daughter was, let's see how old she would have been. She would have been three and just barely three. And we were at a party for grad students. And I was working on a grad degree, and she was trying to climb up this stone wall, this paver wall, mm-hmm. that was just about 6 or 8 inches higher than any other wall she'd ever climbed before. And people were there at the party saying, you know, she's having trouble. She can't do it. Why don't you just lift her up? And I said, no, this is within her capacity to learn. Right. And they were furious that I did not take her and just lift her up on the wall. And she was huffing and she was looking a little askance at me like she wanted me to do something. But the main thing was that she was had a struggle that mattered to her.
Right.
And I didn't get in the middle of it. And she succeeded. But people have a hard time when you let them possibly fall or make their own mistakes.
Right.
And having that distance. And it's hard in this culture because we tend to be either cut loose or overprotective.
Sure.
We don't know much about this
right.
middle space.
And by allowing her to do that, you allowed her to feel the success and her accomplishment when she wouldn't have felt otherwise. So
yes, that's exactly
I understand
right.
that completely.
Yeah, yeah. And just being around to make sure that if she falls, she doesn't get too badly injured.
Right.
You know, and or to help help put things together when they fall apart. Let's cut to music quickly. And we're going to play Highway Tune from Greta Van Fleet. I'm going to get this name right sooner or later. Here we go. We'll be right back. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Derek Osborne. So, Derek, I tend to go a couple of different directions in the show and at this point. And one is, how has life surprised you and turned out differently than you would have expected? And I imagine you have some stories on that front. But also the other question is, how have you had to change in ways that you would not have anticipated or chosen? But it's been important for you to make those changes.
Sure. Well, I think change is part of life.
Yeah.
Some of it's anticipated and some of it certainly isn't.
Some of it's surprising and some of it's in a good way and some of it's horrifying.
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing I had to adapt to, several years ago, I went through a divorce. That was a very painful process for me and something I really didn't anticipate. That kind of came out of the blue. Mm-hmm. And I think it's things like that that happen. And of course, this happens to lots of people. You know, this isn't an experience, unique to me by any stretch.
Right.
But it's definitely challenging.
Right. And what about you made it surprising to you that it happened?
Well, I didn't expect it, you know.
But what about you was didn't expect it? What about you was not aware, didn't see the signs?
I'm not sure. Maybe it was simply me being oblivious. I don't know. I certainly that could have happened.
Right.
Says, you know, when a divorce happens, it shouldn't be a surprise, I guess, that you should have saw the signs and things like that. And maybe I just simply didn't because it was something I didn't think would ever happen or could happen.
Right, right. And given the story, I mean, there's things coming to my mind. When we've dealt with the issues from our childhood, we feel like we put them behind us.
Sure.
And we can move forward, and then we don't necessarily keep in touch with the relationships because we solved that problem.
Well,
I've lost track of people because my life went off in such an interesting direction, or I had put things on hold so long that and I'm twice divorced, so this is
right.
Not new territory for me.
Sure.
And it's just interesting how the many ways we can be clueless.
Yeah, and I think what was interesting and enlightening for me is, growing up in divorce, mm-hmm. I always wanted to be the one to break that cycle,
sure.
I'm not going to let that happen to me. And that's good to think that way,
right.
For sure. But until it happens to you, I mean, you come to the realization, well, it doesn't always just matter what I think and feel.
Right.
There's another party to this.
Right.
And,
And sometimes the kids don't want it, and sometimes the kids welcome it.
And when you go into a marriage, I mean, thinking that I'm going to control this and this isn't going to happen to me, when it comes down to a divorce, you don't control
you
it.
Don't, right,
there's, like I said, another party involved, and, it just happens, and it's something you have to deal with. But, in going through that experience, it was completely devastating at the time. Mm-hmm. I didn't see for quite a while how my life was ever going to improve again, mm-hmm. and get better, and I was going to get through that.
Right.
And
how many years ago was that?
About five,
okay.
or so. Yeah. And it went on for years.
Yeah.
And it just drags you down as a person, the constant back and forth and the process that you have to go through and all the different stages and all that you don't see the end in sight at times.
Right.
And, my life, looking back now, it was like, wow, maybe I should have welcomed it, but I
right.
didn't, my life has improved so drastically as a result of that trial and going through that, now you look back and say, okay, yeah, that was a lot to go through, but boy, to get me to where I am now, it was a blessing in disguise,
right,
basically.
Right. So how would you describe the difference in you now from before?
Well, you have to be, I have to be more careful in my relationships. I have to value them better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something we all have to do. I'm in a great relationship now that I never saw myself being in.
How are you behaving or how are you engaging differently now than you did?
Well, I think it's important and I think it takes people a long time to learn this lesson, but you have to pick your battles, you know, well, basically, yes. You know, don't let the little things bother you, right. Whether it be in the household, in your relationships, you know, you have to realize that people are just people, mm-hmm. and we all fail. We all make mistakes. We all say horrible things to each other at times that we wish we could take back. And, you know, pick your battles, you know, and don't worry about the little stuff and just let people be people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's what I've learned in all that.
And so, so the surprise is how much better you could live than you
exactly. Are. Right. And if somebody told me, you know, 5 years ago, this is what's in store for you
or
in
even,
the future.
Or even more likely 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't have believed them. Right. And to be in such a great, you know, I'm engaged now. I have a wonderful fiance and, you know, in a relationship I never thought I could have. Right. And it's right. just fantastic.
And you learned something.
Absolutely.
In the process.
Right, right.
Right. And neat, neat. No, that's very powerful. Let me do the station ID since we're close to the half okay. hour and then we'll move on. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Derek Osborne. And so now we're going to move into some of the more political questions. And the first one, which is not the more complicated one, but the first one is, you know, why did you choose to run for Tompkins County Sheriff? Why did you put your hat in the ring for this one?
You know, when I retired 4 years ago, I never dreamed that I would look to come back and get in this game again. It is a hard, hard job, you know, and I believe that's why, you know, you have early retirement options mm-hmm. in that field, you know, a 20-year retirement plan or 25 years, whatever mm-hmm. it is now. And I was at the time very happy to leave.
Right, and why did you leave? Why did you retire?
You know, it was the right time for me. I think, you know, with the current sheriff and myself, we clearly saw things differently. And I don't say that as a negative thing towards him. I just think we had different perspectives on things. And, you know, I just, maybe it wasn't a good match between the two of us for sure, for mm-hmm. a variety of reasons. It was the right time. I was eligible for my retirement. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I was happy to take it.
And it was a conflict, apparently, that the organization couldn't absorb. Because some conflicts institutions and organizations can absorb, and some they can't.
Yeah, perhaps, yeah.
In terms
yeah,
of differences.
I'm not sure.
Differences.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you have to work as a team in that mm-hmm. business. And like I said, maybe we just weren't a good fit for each
right,
other
right.
for a variety of reasons.
Right. And that's more personality driven. Or
yeah,
often
exactly.
Than policy driven.
Right, right. And again, I don't say that as anything bad towards him. It's just, it is what it is. And, mm-hmm. You know, but stepping back, you know, a lot of my perspective on things have changed, you know, since stepping out, you know, being just a normal citizen again, mm-hmm. you know, and looking at things through a different lens has driven me to want to do things differently and come back. You know, for a short time after I left the sheriff's office, I worked with federal inmates up in Syracuse that were pending release mm-hmm. in like a halfway house type environment and trying to get them reintegrated into society and help them make that transition. And, you know, that was life changing too. You know,
right.
I spent 20 some years, you know, prosecuting people, arresting people, won all kinds of awards for it. And that was always the driving force in that field. Arrest, 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 you know. And until you put yourself in the shoes of other people. And, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, again, people shouldn't be held accountable. And there's
right,
a time
right.
and a place to arrest people, certainly.
Right.
And that's
once
a major
there has
part
been
of the job.
A crime or some serious violation.
Right.
Of-
You know, but when I stepped into that role, too, and sat around the table with these folks and heard their stories, it's just, wow, it's mind-blowing, you know, that make my life look like a fantasy, you know, and my problems seem very minute. And trying to curb their behavior and help them do that, because, you know, a lot of people would be shocked, you know, these people I was dealing with, some of them committed horrendous crimes,
right, right.
just stuff you see on TV. Mm-hmm. But they wanted to do better, you know, and it was almost sad to witness because the deck was just so stacked against them, you know.
Right.
Here I'm trying to find somebody, you know, with 3-4 children, paying child support, a job. You know, first of all, trying to find an employer that would even be willing to take the risk of taking them on. And then the jobs they do find are in fast food, things like that.
Right, right.
And it's like, what chance does this person have to improve their life? It's just almost not there.
Right.
And it was sad to see.
Right. So, and even if they can choose not to repeat the past based on the injustice they have survived,
right.
Having a chance to take a new step.
Yeah.
So you
see somebody that wants to make their life better, right. and wants to be a productive mm-hmm. Community member. How do they do that? You right. know, and it's just like the options aren't there. So you almost couldn't blame them for turning back to a life of crime, and that's wrong.
Right. But how does that affect how has that informed your wanting to run for sheriff? Because that's kind of where we are here.
It's made me more compassionate, for starters, right. and that's the biggest thing. And I don't want that to sound like weakness, because when you are in public safety, you do have to go after the bad guys, you know. But that doesn't mean you can't also, on the flip side, try to work with that person at some level to make their life better and return them to society a better person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
If you're not doing that, again, like you mentioned, the cycle's just getting repeated.
Right. And how do I express this? Because I grew up in a rural environment where, you know, farming was the predominant occupation. There are lots of accidents.
Sure.
You work with animals, and you work, even when you work well with them, they're large and things, people get hurt, and you get it just and then just the whole notion of physical force is much more a part of life in
sure.
farming. You try to use it well. And this notion of being compassionate and forceful, there are times when you may want to have a person step back with fear, at a level of fear or concern for themselves within what we would call an inch of their life. But the compassion is to never go over that line.
Sure.
And to know, to read it so that you're not bullying,
mm-hmm.
but you are creating an environment that allows a second look to be taken.
Right.
That stops
right.
something, but does not permanently damage anyone.
Yeah. Well, there's a time and place for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. An idea that we could practice to develop that awareness of how the other person is responding, mm-hmm. how to read it, and when to stop, because it's different for each person.
Sure.
It's different for each encounter. We don't think about that as a culture.
Right.
How to use force responsibly.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's easy to be in that field and just go out and, you know, one arrest after another, and then you just, you know, you lock somebody up and you wash your hands of it.
Right.
It's easy to get in that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And law enforcement is a profession, you know, that's, like I said, that's been awarded
right.
For years. And
right.
that's the culture, you know, that law enforcement gets into, I think. And I think it's okay to look at the other side of it.
Right. And I interviewed Judge Rowley, and he said that one of his practices is he goes and visits every institution where anyone has ever gone that he's sentenced.
Sure.
Because it's his responsibility to follow up with them and to know the context into which they're going.
Right.
And in a certain sense, that would be a good policy to think of for law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
because I doubt that it happens much.
Right. Well, you know, it really hit me too. You know, years ago, I was in the jail, the Tompkins County Jail, and I saw a young man, and I remember asking jail staff, you know, mm-hmm. what's he in here for? Who is he? And because he was kind of acting up, to put it mildly. And I was given his name, and I said, well, you know, the name was somebody, I remember that name. And mm-hmm. I said, well, geez, I used to, arrest somebody by that name all the time down in Cortland when I worked for Cortland PD. And come to find out, that was the young man's father. And what made it even stranger was when the corrections officer said, well, his father's two cells down. And that really hit me. Wow, father and son in the
right.
same jail,
right.
two cells apart. And, you know, what a cycle, you know.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, and that goes back to what I said before, that, you know, if we're not curbing that cycle somehow, or at least trying, we're just repeating the same old pattern.
Let's take a break for music, and then we'll come back to the two explicit candidate questions. We're going to play Greta Van Fleet, Black Smoke Rising. Oh. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Derek Osborne. So, Derek, for this next segment of the show, I have two questions and that I ask each candidate, and you pick one to answer, and they're really a cluster of questions, and they're on the sheet behind here. The first option is, when did your thriving require that you ask for critical help? Why were you in such a state of need? What did you learn about yourself and others when you were critically dependent? And how has that shaped your serving others? That's one set of questions around your need for help, asking help, your experience. The next question is, when have you advocated for and won a decision that later proved terribly misguided or wrong? How did you acknowledge the mistake? How did you address and restore relationships with those who were harmed by the decision? These are hard questions.
Very hard questions. Yeah. Let's see. I mean, I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse by any stretch, but, you know, when my thriving needed critical help, that's a really tough question and a very personal one.
And this is pushing the balance between what's personal, which is going to affect your life with other people, and what's sure. private, which is really your own business and doesn't necessarily impact other people, at least in the details.
I mean, I can think of a lot of things. I mean, we've all had sure. our life trials for sure.
Sure.
You know, there's nothing I can say that's specifically unique to me that a lot of other people haven't experienced.
But, and that's part of what this is getting
at. Yeah, you know, and I don't want to keep going back to my divorce, but, you know, that was a big turning point in my life for sure. And, you know, it's quite easy to, when you're going through something like that, to fall into a trap of, you know, self-pity, despair, depression. And, you know, I faced all those things, and as do a lot of people. And, you know, that's something, you know, for sure I couldn't have gotten through completely on my own. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so did I need critical help at that time, like you phrased it? Right. Sure. I mean, that's times.
How did you engage it? What was it and how did you engage
it? Well, you know, as a person, for me, it's very easy to try to, you know, because again, you know, the way I grew up in the profession I've chosen to be in for so many years, it's very easy to want to try to solve problems. You know,
right. Solving the problem.
And, you know, you take something like that on yourself and you're like, I can get through this and do it all on my own. I don't need the help of others. And there's always something that happens in your life where the painful truth hits you right in the face and makes you realize, I can't get through this on my own. I do need that help. You know, and that's when we call upon, you know, our close friends and family and things like that. And, you know, and just looking for that guidance and help and having somebody to complain to and cry to.
What was the need that you had that you hadn't acknowledged before?
Well, it was an incident in my life that for once I didn't know how to solve it, you know, right. And being that person that, you know, you're always trying to solve everybody else's problems and help people, you know, I looked at myself and said, I don't know how to do this, you know, and how to get through this on my own. And it pushed me to have to ask for people for help. And you know, it's hard because you don't want to be a burden on other people. And there does come a point in time when even your close friends may, you know, you fear they may be sick and tired of hearing about it, you know, for sure.
Right.
You know, and, you don't want to be.
And part of that is true. And sure. Part of that is projection because you're sick and tired of talking about it because right. You can't do anything else.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, if I could go back in time, I wish I could have saw at that time that, yeah, I do have the power to get over this problem in my life. And we all do. You know, time heals everything. And you have to learn to be patient, you know, and that's right. What I learned from all that.
But your patience involved bringing people in to your life.
Right. Yeah.
And depending upon asking for help. Did they help you solve your problem, or did they just help you live with agony until you could begin to discover.
Well, I think in a situation like that, nobody can truly, you know, tell you what to do or help you completely.
That's one extreme.
If anything,
that's not going to work.
You know, just having an ear, you know, and listening is the best you can do. And of course, all your, even your closest friends will tell you, you know, Derek, you're going to get through this. This is fine. You know, you're not the first one to go through this. And
well, and
you're not seeing the good that could come out and how you, who you are as a person and how good you are. And you don't see that at the time. And maybe you don't even want to listen to that because, you know, you're not believing it.
You've been hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes some of that hurt is self-inflicted and legitimate, and some of that hurt is just the unknowing of how you can possibly get up and move forward.
Yeah. Yeah, cuz when you're with somebody for so long, you don't see yourself in a different situation, you know, being on your own and all that. But you know, it's almost laughable now. You know, like I said, you know, once you get to the end, you know, and you see and you welcome all these new wonderful things in your life, you're like, wow, why, how did I let myself ever feel that bad? But people don't see that at the time.
But this gets at the last part of the question. How has this experience of being devastated and needing at least people to bear with you, if not help you understand what you can do next, how has this experience of being of need helped shape the way you serve others?
Well, when you're serving other people, you're helping them, and you have to understand that all people need help at times, and you have to be that person to be willing to give that.
But how has it helped you understand what their condition is? When you've been in that condition, what do you bring to? What do you check out? What do you do differently now?
You have to. Well, you have to not only stay open-minded to people, like I said earlier, about you can't judge somebody initially without having an understanding of what they could be going through, or maybe what their background is, or their experiences, and all that good stuff. And you learn to be more compassionate as well. Again,
it sounds like you slow down because even your speech patterns right now slowed down.
Sure. I think that's true. You know, I view life differently. I'm much more relaxed than I've ever been in my life. I take the time to appreciate what's really important in my life more so than I probably used to. And not to say the same thing over and over, but I like to learn more about people. I don't, you know, I look back in my career, and I did help a lot of people, you know, and I'm proud of that. And I have people, you know, to this day that thank me for the help I gave them in the past. But I think I could have done more, and I think I can do more. And just to have a better appreciation for people in general and maybe what their background is. You know, there's people have gone through horrible things, or people that maybe have experienced prejudice. Who knows? It could go on and on that I haven't ever had to deal with. And you have to keep an open mind to that and try to put yourself in other people's shoes and be a little more empathetic, I think.
Yeah, no, and that is the lesson of having suffered and learned.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think, you know, like I said, we all go through horrible things in life. That's life, you know, and you have to choose to, you know, grow and thrive from that or let it get you down. And you know, obviously the first option is the best, and you do learn from it. And, you know, I think those things happen to us for a reason, you know, so we do grow as people.
Right. When we are stymied, we find a reason because we need it to make sense of our lives.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's switch gears here. The way I normally close the show, and we're down to about the last 10 or 12 minutes, 15 minutes, is how do you take care of yourself now? throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly. How do you take care of yourself physically, emotionally, and intellectually? And how do you know you need to do it?
Well, I can tell you this and be completely honest. Uh-huh. Running a campaign, you tend not to take care of yourself.
Myself. And this is your first campaign.
It is. I've never ran for an office ever before, and this is my first time. It's very exhausting. I can be honest in that answer.
So most people say I don't do a very
good job.
You asked me that question, but I don't do a very good job.
I haven't done a very good job lately. I do enjoy working out at the gym, although mm-hmm. I've neglected that for several months now. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to, you know, when the campaign is over and things settle down, hopefully a little bit, getting back into that. I enjoy all kinds of things. I like taking time. I have a workshop I set up in my house. I like to, you know, refinish old furniture or work on wood crafting projects, things like that. I'm not very good at it, but I have a goal of getting better.
Yeah, exactly.
And it gives me time alone where I can sit and just, you know, be alone in my thoughts and work on things without outside stressors. And, you know, that's a big thing for me, and I enjoy that quite a bit. So
that's how you kind of take care of each other, take care of yourself physically and a little bit emotionally through those repetitive actions, and crafting helps you almost, it's almost meditative.
Exactly.
In that activity.
Right.
How do you tend to the relationships that tend to provide the emotional care?
That's a tough one too. You know, in my current relationship, like I said, I've been engaged for a couple of years now, mm-hmm. and we're very excited to look forward to our marriage, mm-hmm. hopefully soon. You know, once the campaign comes to a close, it kind of pushed that back as well. But you know, we both came with vulnerabilities from past relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, we've had to work together. You know, it's very easy for either one of us, you know, to not openly trust very easily. And, you know, that's something we've always have as a challenge for both mm-hmm. of us. But, you know, we have some common background in that area that where we can understand how each other may feel. And there's times we could each get a little goofy in our feelings and thoughts because of our backgrounds in that area. But it's also comforting to know that each of us understand
when things get a little.
Yeah, lighter. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And that's something that makes our relationship very mm-hmm. strong. And, you know, we both know deep in our hearts that, you know, we're very committed to each other.
Right.
And we don't want to have the other person experience what each of us has experienced in the past.
Right.
So we have that to bond us for sure.
Right. And you know, one of the liabilities of a primary marriage relationship in this culture mm-hmm. is that we put too much weight on it. Mm-hmm. So how beyond your partner and your kids, how do friendships shape your life, or do you connect with friends?
Yeah, well kind of I'm the type of person. You know, I've never been referred to as a life of the party.
You know, right. It's okay. You said you were very shy to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. I tend to be introverted at times, uh-huh. For sure. And I'm not a type of person, and never have been, where I have, you know, a dozen friends at any good time. I'm comfortable with one or two good friends.
Introverts tend to do it.
Yeah, and that's how I am and always been, and I don't see that changing in the future. I mean, socially, I love hanging out with people and having a good time and all that stuff. But when it comes down to those core relationships, you know, I tend to stick to just one or two people for sure.
And they go deep.
Exactly.
How do you take care of yourself intellectually?
Well, I'm always trying new things. You know, it's funny. It's not funny. You know, I think you have to expand your horizons at times, and people may be shocked by this, but I've done different things. I've tried to not always have my life focused on law enforcement, and that's a trap I've seen so many officers fall into that becomes consuming.
What are your avocations? What are your interests outside?
Lots of things. I've taken classes at TC3 on the side just for fun. You know, when I went mm-hmm. to school as a college student, you know, you were there because you had to be, or you felt like you had to be.
Yeah, it was
you know,
next step.
And you never took the classes you really wanted to take. You took the ones that were required and what you thought would mm-hmm. maybe help your career. But I've gone to TC3 just to take an art history history class. Mm-hmm. I've gone there to take a photography class.
Right.
And I love it,
yeah.
You know, and I've always liked art. And just to go there and take that classes like that with no pressure,
right.
That I don't have a parent that's going to want to see my grade,
right.
that I can just enjoy doing something I enjoy doing and learning about. And you know what? I always... Those classes, I aced them. I always had straight A's,
right.
Because it's something I really enjoyed,
yeah.
You know, and it wasn't work.
Right. And what's the impact of doing that pleasure thinking and then going back into a workplace?
I think it just expands your mind, you know, and I think if anything, it keeps you healthy. So you don't fall into that trap of cynicism that you can in law enforcement of seeing the bad all the time. Mm-hmm. And just learning new things and knowing that there's more to the person than just what you may be doing, you mm-hmm. know, and some people laughed, you know, I grew up, a close friend of our family was a barber. So mm-hmm. when I retired from the sheriff's office, I went to barber school, you know, and, you know, it's kind of people like, well, why would you want to do that? I go, it's just something I've always wanted to learn how to do. It was,
right.
a 4-week, 6-week, class. What the heck, you yeah. know? And so anytime I want to give somebody a haircut, I can do that too, you know? And, you know, and it just, I don't want to be that one level person, you know,
right.
where all I know yep. is law enforcement, right. you know, and that makes you more interesting and fun. So.
This next angle on the question is, given that you grew up in a kind of unstable environment, when did you realize that self-care was something that you were responsible for, but also that you could do? And over your life, how has that quality of self-care changed?
I learned that way too late. I
okay.
learned that late as an adult. Probably not even, I would say even in the last 10 years.
Yeah, and it's yeah. very common. Sometimes people learn it as early as 8 or 10 or 12 years old, and sometimes people learn it in their 70s and 80s.
Sure.
You know,
well, I'm
yeah.
fortunate I didn't wait that long.
Yeah.
I'm 48. I wish I learned it a lot earlier, uh-huh. But fortunate I learned it when I did.
Sure. So what dawned on you that this is part of my work? This is what I need to be attentive to?
I think it just comes naturally to people, or maybe to me at least, as I found myself getting older. I mean, I don't consider myself old by any stretch, but...
You find yourself not getting any younger.
Yeah, and when you get into your 40s, you know, you do realize quite quickly I'm not in my 20s anymore,
right.
And I'm sure that happens every time you reach a new age milestone. You do start to focus on, okay, I got to take better care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, work isn't my only thing in life, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't be. You know, you have to find that work-life balance. And I think that's so hard for people. We get wrapped up in our careers and our jobs.
But you didn't appreciate the question until after the divorce.
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair.
Yeah, that's partly an artifact of our culture where we're not encouraged to look at our lives holistically and take care of them.
Yeah.
We kind of grow up almost feral.
Right. Well, you know, I think, you know, with my, you know, growing up with my father, you know, he dropped out of school in 7th grade, you know, and it was to work with his
right,
father. And,
right.
you know, I grew up in that culture that work was important. That
right.
was the most important thing. And one way I think, you know, like I said, I didn't play sports in high school because that wasn't
right.
a way that would have pleased my father. You know, I think the
right.
way I found a way that I felt like I looked good in my father's eyes was to work.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I worked 40 hours a week when I was a senior in high school.
Yeah.
You know, it was just what I did. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But
similar.
You got to be careful with that, you know?
No. When I was 11, I started working outside the home for pay. My father
right.
died when I was 7.
Oh, geez.
So,
yeah.
And I worked 25, 30 hours a week during the school year from 7th grade on, and 60 hours a week in the summertime.
Right.
And that was just normal for me.
Sure.
And it was too much on some levels, but it was,
yeah.
it made it so I could contribute to the family and
uh-huh.
can have that kind of ethic that you're talking about.
Right,
too.
Right. And I think, you know, I've had people say to me before, you know, what oftentimes makes us most successful is also what's going to kill us.
That's exactly
you know?
Right.
So
that's
you have
exactly
to be
right.
really careful, and, you
right.
know, and I appreciate the work-life balance.
And
now.
I appreciate you making that reflection. Derek, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much.
And we're going to close with a Safari Song from Greta Van Fleet. Do you want to say anything about it, or should we just play?
No, I just, I think it's a great band. It reminds me of Led Zeppelin. They sound a lot like them. And, you know, this is music that, you know, always kind of keeps me going and makes me energized again.
Right,
so.
Right. And this is a side of you that the public doesn't often see.
Yeah, they probably would never guess that, no.